Today's scripture will be Mark 6, 30-44. In the Pew Bible, it's page 873. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done, taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going, they did not even have a chance to eat. They said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When people landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so the disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go in surrounding countryside, the villages, and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wage. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five and two fish." Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups at the green grass. So they sat down in groups of the hundreds and fifties. Taking the five loaves and the two fish and looking up to the heavens, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples and distributed it to the people. He also divided the two fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up the 12 baskets full of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000.
Good morning. I want to begin by thanking you for allowing Judy, my wife, and I to be here with you today. It's always good to be in the house of the Lord and be with those who love the Lord. And we have sensed that here in this place. The title of what we're going to be working on today would very simply be, "What can be accomplished with five loaves and two fish?" And when I come to think about the conditions, the current conditions that many people in our world are living in our day right now, one of the images that comes to my mind is that of the wilderness. You ever found yourself in the wilderness? Sometimes that's good. For the word wilderness has different meanings in different settings at different times in our lives. It can be an area where it has been left natural. It has not been messed up by man trying to build everything for his own glory. It is a beautiful, natural, wild scene that's left just like God wanted it to be. One of the areas in this part of the world that impresses me with that is riding up through the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. Lord, I don't know how many acres and how many miles are there up there, but you can go up there and you can pull off the road and look at the overlooks, and you can just see the hand of God there creating it. And thankfully, our leaders and our forefathers have had the common sense to leave that alone so that we can see it the way God left it. Wilderness can also mean a time of confusion, of chaos, of a harsh and bitter land. When you think about that, think about the wilderness that the Israelites were in when they left the land of Egypt and the miry slave pits of Egypt. They went out into the desert. And the scriptures tell us that as far as they could see was desolation. Chaos. Miles upon miles upon miles of sand. Not a whole lot of water. Not a whole lot of food. Not a whole lot of comfort. But miles and miles of desert. In the Old Testament, we find that the people of Israel had some interesting experiences in the wilderness. For we see that it was in the wilderness that they would have to face some struggles, and they would have to discover that their lives are not easy and are not comfortable all the time. In the wilderness, the Hebrews would discover that there was going to be a time of struggle. There's going to be a time of struggle in our lives as well. And they would be faced with the need to make some serious decisions about the meaning of life and the purpose of life for them and their families. Remember, God had come to Moses and had called Moses to go tell Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And they were going to go through the wilderness. In the wilderness, there were no material things to comfort them. There were no pleasures and there were no luxury items. Strangely to see in our day, there would be no fine homes. There would be no comfortable motels or hotels. There would be no cell phones. Now, how in the world can we get along without a cell phone? There would also be no internet. And there would be, worst of all, there would be no Facebook pages to go look up on and check up on your friends and see what all they had been doing. Lord, how could these people live without all these modern items? But they were going to be faced with it. Miles upon miles of sand and intense heat. They would have a hard time finding water to drink. In fact, God told Moses to strike the rocks and the water would flow through. And they were to find a hard time to find the water to feed themselves, to water themselves and to water the animals. This was surely a harsh and difficult place in which to live. Now, you will also find a little bit later on in the Old Testament that in the exile after the Assyrians and the Babylonians had come in and destroyed the Jewish nation, they again come back to the wilderness. This time they're exiles. Their theology had collapsed. They were thinking, God, where are you? Why have you put us out here? Have you punished us? And is this going to be all? But it was in that wilderness discussion and in that wilderness setting that they were to learn some powerful and lasting lessons about life. And those lessons are for us as well. For it was in the wilderness that the people were going to have to encounter God. God was going to come to them. He was not going to leave them alone. Remember, Jesus said he would never leave us alone. He doesn't. He went into the wilderness with them. And God was going to come and guide them and direct them through all of the difficulties that they would experience on their journey into the promised land. He will do the same for us, folks. He will guide us. He will direct us through the struggles that we go through. I'll give you a personal example. The 25th of June of this year, a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I had an experience like that. We were at home on a Monday afternoon, about 6 o'clock. We had a lightning storm. The lightning hit our house and set our house on fire. I've got pictures where it hit my upstairs office through the wall. Well, it was amazing to me to see how that would happen. Because I'm thinking, you know, there's nothing metal on the outside of that wall that would draw lightning. But there was on the inside. And I will believe until my dying day that God's hand was there because the lightning struck 2 natural gas lines. And it burned them on the outside, the covering on the outside. And the firemen and the building inspectors, when they came back, told us that if those lines had ruptured, we might not be here talking to you this morning. God's hand was there. Yes, it's been difficult, but God's hand was there to protect us and leading us and guiding us through that time. The people in Israel and the people in our day have a question. You know, Jesus, when you look at his parables and his teachings, always has a way of reaching out and touching us, but he doesn't leave us by the same person. He's always looking to ask us a question. Remember he says, who has ears to hear, let him hear. And the question here that we see is, would the people then and now become people of faith? You see, faith in the New Testament is not a noun or an item like this hymn book. Faith in the New Testament is a verb. And a verb means that it has to imply some action to it. Are we going to be those who would put our faith in action? Because if we're going to have legitimate, strong, mature faith, it has to take some action. Are we going to become the people of faith who will trust God, no matter what, with our lives and everything that we have? Now, in the present text, we find Jesus again taking his disciples out into the wilderness. Prior to this, the disciples have been walking and working with Jesus and assisting him as he ministered to a lot of people. And I'm sure they were tired and there was a lot of demands upon them all. And Jesus says, look, we need you to go aside and get a time of rest and reflection and also spend some spiritual time with Jesus. And the disciples were tired and they just wanted to get away from the crowd. You ever had those opportunities on Friday evening when you were going home for the week? You say, man, I don't want to answer the phone. I don't want to look at the computer. I just want to get away from everything. I just need some rest. Well, sure, we've all had those times. And that's probably what the disciples were feeling. Perhaps they wanted just to get away and forget all the needs of everybody else and focus on themselves. For when they look up and see the crowds, the disciples do something strange. They suggest to Jesus, Jesus, you know, it's getting late in the day. Why don't you send these people away so they can go into the towns nearby, although it may take a little bit of a journey to find those, and they can take care of themselves. They can find the feast. It would take us over 2 years worth of work to feed these people, and we don't have the resources. I want you to hear that through the eyes of faith. We don't have the resources. And yet you've got the Master right in the front of their presence. And they're trying to say, we don't have the resources. Yes, we do. This must mean that the disciples were telling Jesus that what they were missing would be an opportunity to do ministry which would cause their faith to grow stronger. Now go back in your younger years and think about the times when you were at school, or maybe now you still are, and you like to go to the gym to work out, and you go to lifting weights. And you're working out, you're going on the treadmill, you're on the elliptical, or you're on the exercise bike, or you're in the swimming pool, and you're working out. What are you doing? You are exercising some things that will make you grow stronger if you do that. But the disciples couldn't see that. This was beyond what they could measure. The disciples looked at the situation and they were overwhelmed. Remember the old parable about, the American parable about, is the glass half empty or half full? It's a matter of perspective. You take a 12-ounce glass, for instance, and you fill it up with exactly 6 ounces of water. Now look at it, think about it. Is that glass half empty or is that glass half full? It's going to say a lot about you and your perspective. But these disciples were overwhelmed. Man, there's no way in the world that we can take care of this many people. Now, Mark gives the number here as 5,000 men. And it's probably safe to assume that there were also an equal number of women and children. So we may very well be looking at a crowd of between 15 and 20,000 people. You're out here in the middle of the wilderness, and you're expecting us, Jesus, to feed them? How in the world is that possible? When they looked around, they tried to look at what they had to work with. I have known of churches, in fact, I know of a Sunday school class in my first church, that one of the men had a brother who was a pastor. And the man told me one day in conversation that his Sunday school class had $300 in the bank. Okay? But his brother asked him, said, "Well, Tommy, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it?" His brother pastor asked him, "What are you going to do with it?" You see, when they look around and see what they've got to work with, that's just part of the story. What are they going to do with it? And they made the discovery that all they had was 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, I don't think we're talking about humongous tunas or something of a large degree here. Probably something that a little boy could carry in a back sack on his side. 5 loaves and 2 fish, and you've got 20,000 people that you may be feeding? Now, we can ration it out real good, but I can see the disciples' earthly mindset going along and saying, "Man, this is not going to work. You know us how well I do. It's not going to work." To make things even stranger and even more impossible was what Jesus said. You see, Jesus wants to teach them a very spiritual lesson. Jesus has the eyes of faith. Jesus is looking at the positive and not the negative. And his instructions to the disciples are, you give them something to eat. Now, just let that soak in for a moment. In my mind's ear and in my mind's eye, I can hear some of those more immature disciples who haven't learned the lessons of faith very well begin to whisper among themselves. You know, they may be afraid to say something to Jesus, but they can talk among themselves a little bit. And I can hear them asking the question, "Is he crazy? How in the world can we feed this crowd with 5 loaves and 2 fish? The disciples of Jesus' day, as well as the faith followers of our day, need to learn the vitally important lesson that where God is, there are no limits. They're literally looking at the Son of God in the flesh. The one the New Testament tells us has created everything. And yet you're saying to me, disciples, you're saying that you don't think he can do it? He's already done it. There's no limit to what can be done and what can be accomplished if and when we put our trust in him and place our talents and our resources at his disposal. God will magnify it as he does here. Notice the results of the disciples passing out the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. They not only feed up to 20,000 people, but Mark tells us over in the latter part of the passage that they had 12 basketfuls left over. Now that's some pretty good magnification, isn't it? In our own day, there is a present and a burning need among people in our society and throughout our world who hunger and thirst for ministry from those of our neighbors and find themselves facing great need in order to find the meaning and the purpose of life. I want to make you aware of something. Do you realize that the New Testament teaches us that every single Christian, all of us, are called upon twice? You're called by God to come and repent of your sins and accept Him as your Lord and make Him first place in your life. That's call number one. But folks, it does not stop there. There is a second calling, and that is the call to serve. You see, God gives every one of us our own unique set of gifts and talents. He gives us things that we can do better than most people will ever meet. He gives us the ability to reach out and care for and minister to somebody that other people may not even be able to touch. But it's a God-given talent. And if we honestly look at ourselves, we will have to admit and discover, and it's an exciting discovery, that Jesus Christ has given us already a wealth of experience and knowledge and resources that are just ready for God to put to use. For instance, there are people in our churches, in all churches, who are retired. Some of them have a very good, solid income upon which to live, and they're looking for something, what to do with their time. Well, they may be an excellent bookkeeper. They may be an excellent human resources person. They may be an excellent whatever. When they become aware of that, they can reach out and they can touch others. Indeed, there is a great need. If we look at the attitudes of those who are currently outside of the local congregation, you know, and in a lot of denominations, in fact, in most denominations, most churches are declining. Why? Frankly, if you look at it and research it, you will find out it's because a lot of Christians have not organized and realized and developed their own growth and their own talents. And the people out here are starving to death for it. And they want us to see what we can give back to them. What can we do that will help them find meaning and purpose in their lives? What can we give back to our own community? You know, Jesus said start in Jerusalem and then Samaria and go to the far corners of the world. There's a mission field for everybody. And they want to see what we can do to give back a part of God's love to them. As I mentioned a moment ago, it's not just pastors, it's not just missionaries, it's not just what we might call professional Christians who are called by God, but it is every one of us. And it is a high and holy event when people come to realize that the God, sovereign almighty God, who created the world and the one who sent His Son Jesus to come to earth and die for us and redeem us, has called us, has put His hand upon us. I never thought I would be standing where I am. And one of the most exciting things that I can yearn for and see as a pastor is when ordinary Christians, ordinary folk, come to realize that, yes, they are gifted. They are gifted, and it comes from God. It doesn't come from anybody else. You're not called by the church. You're not called by the preacher. You're not called by any denomination. Rather, you are called by sovereign Almighty God. And when we can realize that, we can seek to discover it, develop it, and then put it to use for the glory of God. What was it Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount? Let your light so shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. One example that I'll give you that I think brought it really home to me was back, it's been a number of years now, about 1999, Judy and I were in a church on the Outer Banks, near the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And we had an unusual event. Yes, it was a disaster, but it was also an opportunity. We had two hurricanes back to back. One of them just stood out right off the coast there and just spun around and pumped a bunch of water into eastern North Carolina. In fact, the eastern part of the state was pretty well flooded. Well, then here comes Hurricane Floyd behind that and just continued it, and it swiped out a lot of things. We were living in a place where the river was about 6 miles wide, and it was about a mile from our house as the crow flies. That river went directly into the Albemarle Sound and into the Atlantic Ocean. So our particular area was not hurt that badly. However, you go down the road about 10 miles, you had to have a boat to go through downtown. On toward Rocky Mount, which is on to the western side of it, is there were a number of homes that were wiped out because of the flooding and the damage. Some of that, however, was really a mixed blessing. I know the house that we worked on for disaster relief was about eaten alive with termites. But yet, Baptist men and women, as well as other denominations, even from as far east as Charlotte, or far west as Charlotte, went in there, and you could see the church vans, and we rebuilt some of those homes. There were over 600 homes in a little town called Tarboro that were destroyed. But before we got into that, this was on Thanksgiving weekend. Now think about Thanksgiving weekend. How important, how sacred that is to you and your family. There were a group of guys, about four of them I think it was, that came from Moxville, which is west of Winston-Salem, down there to us. And what they were going to do was go into some of these homes that had been hit with water and mold and mildew and all this other kind of damage. And they were going to tear out dirty, nasty, wet, soggy drywall and rehang it on Thanksgiving weekend. Now, they're not charging a penny, not a one. And from that far west, you're not going to get any church members. And one of the guys told me when he came in, a layman now by the name of Fred Rogers. I remember Fred. He told me, he said, when we go in here, you know what the number one question we get raised asked is? Why are you down here doing this? Why are you down here doing this? You're not getting anything out of it. And I remember responding to him, I said, and I will submit to you that when you get somebody to ask that kind of question, friends, that is an open door as wide as it can be to tell somebody in very real and very concrete terms that they can understand up close and personal what the love of God in Jesus Christ is all about. The house that we worked on in Tarboro was a single mother who worked for the school system and had two teenage children. And we got together. I would drive the church van. We were 70 miles away from them then. But we went in, and when I told the local coordinators that day, I said, you know, now you got to realize, we don't have a bunch of young bucks, men, that can go in and do the heavy frame. Now, if you can give us something that ladies and retired folks can do, we'll take it. Man says, I got just the house for you. We went in there and I did not know. It was just, it was a blessing to me to see mission work come that close to home where you can actually put your hand on it and you can feel God working through you. And also what we saw was this lady had a house that was rebuilt. It took us a while to do it. But when you see some of the people hanging wallpaper, volunteers hanging wallpaper, painting, man, you talk about the work of God. That's precious. That's what I'm talking about. Everybody has got talents that they could do. I couldn't hang wallpaper straight if I tried. Man, I'd have the biggest mess you've ever could imagine. But we had ladies in that church, ladies now, that could come in and do it. We did the painting and all that. And when that lady, when we finished with that, I told our people, yeah, when you see us on Sunday morning, we worked all day on Saturday. When you see us on Sunday morning, we're tired, but we're good tired. We're good tired because God is going through us. Now, folks, that's the kind of thing that our world is in need of. The question is, what will you do? What will I do to prepare to partner with God? You see, God is wanting to work in our communities, and He wants some partners. He wants some fellow workers. He wants us, you and I, all of us. What will we personally be ready to do to help to expand the ministry to meet people's needs, which will serve to partner together with God? How will we work to produce the 12 full baskets of food that the disciples picked up? I would submit to you that there's two vitally important questions that folks in our day need to be asking. As one of them I've already mentioned is, why are you down here doing this for us? That's an open door to tell them about the love of God, Jesus Christ. The second question is for the members and the other people who are Christians and yet haven't gotten involved in that. You want to get them to ask the question, how can I get involved in something this exciting? How can I become an instrument and a servant of Jesus Christ? How can I get a part of it? And when you do that, I think you will see God blessing us in so many ways. But it comes down to our own decision about how we will meet the Lord. How will we respond to Him when He calls us to become a Christian? If you're not a Christian this morning, I want to invite you and encourage you to make that decision. It's nothing that you can earn. It's rather, it is a free gift of God. And God will take you no matter where you are in life, no matter what your history is in life, and He will mold you, He will redeem you, He will set you free from the bondages of sin and brokenness and alienation. He will take you out of the spiritual wildernesses of our world, and He will put you in fellowship with Jesus. And then He will call you and allow you to be used of God to serve others for the fulfillment. That's how you grow. You know, you take a bucket of water. Just pour that water in there, and I don't care how fresh it is. Pour the bucket of water in there and let it sit right there. What's going to happen to it? Over time, you're going to see green algae and all kinds of slime and stuff growing in it. It's going to lose its vitality. It's going to lose its value. It's going to lose its good taste. Personally, there's nothing that I can drink that's more refreshing and better to me than good water. But if I let it sit there and die, then it's nothing. If we want our lives to grow, if we want our ministries to grow, we have to be about the process of getting. Our hymn of invitation this morning is hymn number 491, I believe it is. Jesus, I come. If you're here this morning and God is speaking to you about a walk with Him, we invite you to come and make that decision. Either by statement of faith or by accepting Him and becoming a candidate for baptism. Shall we stay together and pray? Or shall we stand together and sing hymn number 491, Jesus, I Come.